You can listen to episodes of Conversations with Joe earlier than everybody else and completely ad-free on Nebula. When you sign up for Nebula, our creator-owned streaming service, you not only get access to ad-free content from my channel, you also get bonus episodes of my videos and exclusive series not available anywhere else. Sign up for Nebula by clicking the link in the description or go to nebula.tv/conversationswithjoe to support the podcast and get more eye-opening content.
It's the reason why I'm talking 80% SpaceX is because the rocket industry right now is 80% SpaceX. It's not just the Starship either. It's Falcon 9, it's Crew Dragon, it's Cargo Dragon, it's all the projects they still have in the pipeline. It's just so much more than what anybody else is doing right now. I mean, you said Blue Origin. They've been developing New Glenn since when? There's nothing. There is. I mean, I'm rooting for everyone. I really sure, am. And sure. I don't really like the hate that is being brought against Blue Origin because largely of because of Jeff Bezos. But you should see it from the engineer's standpoint.
In the last few years since SpaceX has ramped up development of the Starship launch vehicle, there has sprung up a cottage industry of sorts, of online video and content creators who are following the progress of this thing in extreme detail. From 3D artists rendering animations of missions and launches, to people doing aerial photography of the site, to people literally live streaming the launch pad 24 hours a day, to people like today's guest, Felix from What About It, who have just built an entire YouTube channel around sharing these animations and these flybys and live streams, and dissecting them for info and updates and speculating on what's going to happen next. I first spoke to Felix a couple years ago when he reached out to me asking for advice, and we had a nice little chat over Zoom, but since then he's posted every week, grown his channel to 250,000 subscribers, and fairly recently actually relocated his whole family from Germany to Florida so they can be closer to the action. So with Starship getting closer to its first orbital test and the SLS finally about to head for the moon, it hasn't taken off yet as of this recording anyway, but it's getting there. I thought it'd be a good time to kind of sit down and talk to Felix about his story and hear his background, what got him so interested in this subject in the first place, and where he thinks things will go from here. So get ready for some nerdy space talk as I jump into this conversation with Felix Schlang. I just recorded a video yesterday that... it's not going to come out for another week or so. So I think it'll be out by the time this comes out. And I pose a debate, a question in there. The question, it's a lightning round video. So the question came from one of my little Patreon people. And I say little, like they're that big or something. But the question was about Dear Moon, like what's going on with Dear Moon, because we hadn't heard anything in a while. So I looked into it and I'm like talking about it. And, you know, they still, at the time that we're speaking right now anyway, have it planned for 2023. I feel like that's just not going to happen. I mean, they're still, you know, not even at space yet. And so I was like, yeah, it's probably going to be pushed back to 2024, blah, blah, blah. Some light bulbs go off in my head. And I'm like, wait, that's pretty much the same flight path that Artemis II is going to take. And they're scheduled for the same year. Could SpaceX beat NASA to the moon?
They could. In theory, they could. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. I'd love to hear your take on it as somebody who follows the goings on so closely.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that SpaceX still has to do to figure out before they can fly to the moon, especially with a Starship. Mm-hmm. But they also do possess a lot of the technology already. I mean, they're flying Crew Dragons, and a Crew Dragon is nothing more than a, let's say, dumped down moon vehicle. It couldn't land on the moon, of course, because it doesn't have the landing capabilities, but it has everything else that you would need to travel towards the moon. It has the whole life support package, for example. It has the pressurized space and it's human rated, and so on and so forth. And they've been flying quite a few astronauts already. So I've heard some rumors that SpaceX might attempt a flight with a Starship really soon. Of course, it's the typical 2-week thing, and we never know when it's going to happen because there's tons of delays because it's prototyping. But they are very close behind SLS, I'd say. And SLS is very expensive. And it's been in development for, well, officially 11 years, but arguably longer. It's a very old rocket design, and so on and so forth. So if SpaceX pulls off the Starship, if it actually works, if they can actually catch boosters and catch the Starships, and if the heat shield concept they have right now works out, they are close. They are close to making it run, to get it operational. And if they are close, well, they could beat NASA. They have a chance. They definitely do. Definitely to Mars.
When I did this Artemis video just last week, I guess, I kind of described the lunar Starship as sort of a cross between a Crew Dragon and a Starship, because it's a Starship shape, but it's, you know, kind of got the features of a, it's like somebody took a Crew Dragon and just went, and like just stretched it, you know,
yeah,
really long.
Yep.
But no, like as I was looking into that, it's like, I think a long time ago I did like a SpaceX versus NASA thing, and then I stopped doing that because I was like, it's not a versus thing. They're working together. They're not in competition really. But when I started looking at that, and I was like, we're getting really close to having. I mean, Artemis is just about to go up in a couple of weeks, and like you said, like the first orbital Starship maybe soon, hopefully, we're hot on its heels. So SLS will be a little bit in the lead because at least it will have gotten to space, into the moon and everything. But Starship isn't far behind, and we know that they've been iterating on that a lot faster than SLS has. So it's actually kind of an interesting debate that I have going on in my head right now.
Yeah, especially the iteration rate is insane, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They are right now lifting Booster 7 onto the orbital launch mount as we record this. And it took them a week to install all the engines, for example. Just that kind of stuff is... No one works at this speed. It's just... Yeah. I posted on Twitter when they rolled Booster 7 back to the production site at the Boca Chica Starbase. And I posted that... I'm expecting them to roll it back within a week. And somebody else wrote under it that's never going to happen because it's 33 engines they'll have to install, and that's going to take them weeks. And they did that before as well. This is not the first time they installed so many engines at the same time. So that's another indicator for how different SpaceX's take is on, especially on the Starship, because the Falcon 9, minus the landing, is a fairly traditional rocket.
Yeah.
It has even with the landing, it has a fairly quick turnaround of roughly a month, sometimes a little faster, sometimes a little slower, but that's around the time. Mm-hmm. And but that's not nearly what they are trying to do with the Starship. They want to fly it three times a day. And mm-hmm. even when you hear that, it's mind-boggling. And so they have to be able to install 33 engines within a day or two, and that's what they're already doing. And so it's so different in so many different aspects.
Do you know where they make the Raptor engines?
Sorry?
Do you know where they make them?
In Hawthorne.
Like, where's their facility?
In Hawthorne, but they are working on a Raptor facility in Texas. But I do think that is not operational yet. SpaceX... Mm-hmm. is trying to take, that's another thing that is so different from especially SLS, where SLS is proud to be able to manufacture different parts in almost every state of the United States.
Yeah.
SpaceX is right now trying to put everything in one spot, or at least two spots, which would be Texas and Kennedy Space Center. Mm-hmm. The Starbase itself is producing the prototypes. Then you have MacGregor, which isn't too far away from Starbase. Well, Texas is large, but
it's relative, yeah.
It still isn't that far away. That's their test facility. And the only thing that is kind of separated from that right now is Hawthorne building the Raptor 2 engines, but that is going to be shifted to close to MacGregor, where they are building a Raptor 2 factory right now, which is then going to mass produce one of the most advanced rocket engines in the world. And the same at the Kennedy Space Center. They're building the Roberts Road facility right now, and they've already announced that that's going to be tripled in size because they want to put the heat shield bakery where they produce the heat tiles for the Starship. That is supposed to be right next to where they are going to build the Starships at the Cape, and so on. So distances are being shortened, and it works similar to Tesla Gigafactory. Same concept.
In one door, out the other. Raw materials in one side and advanced rocketry out the other. Yeah. Like you do.
Such Mars rockets thing. Out the other side, yeah.
Yeah.
That is incredible. And that is very different from anything anyone else does right now, basically.
Yeah. I mean, the whole paradigm shift between, like you said, the whole... every state in the United States makes some part of... the SLS, you know, and that's the way NASA's always had to operate, because it sounds cynical to call it a jobs program, but from the standpoint of a U.S. senator, it's absolutely a jobs program, you know. So everybody wants to bring some jobs to their state and like claim some piece of this history making event and all that. So that's how they have to do it at NASA, and it's sort of a battle of two different paradigms. You know, you got the vertical integration that SpaceX is all about, and then you've got the very horizontal across the entire states horizontal that mm-hmm. NASA has to do. And it's interesting. It's always interesting to me watching how different companies and different organizations do, you know, just kind of have different ways of doing things, like SpaceX versus Blue Origin, which is very secretive and everything's behind closed doors and you don't know what they're up to. And they're kind of operating in stealth mode all the time, always. And then SpaceX is literally just like, you can set your cameras up over there across the street while we do this top secret building stuff over here. Yep. but here's what's interesting about that. Like, and I was going to bring this up at some point, so we might as well jump into it. You have a whole business around SpaceX, around the development of Starship. Like, I know that's not all you talk about,
yeah,
but it's clearly your bread and butter, you know.
It's 80%.
Yeah. And you're not alone. There's Marcus House, there's Lab Padre, there's all these guys that, like, there's like a whole ecosystem, a media ecosystem around this one company developing this vehicle. Where else can you find that? And like, that's why everybody's so excited about it. That's why there's so much buzz generated about it. It's just this whole different way of approaching it, instead of like, you know, oh, don't look at what I'm doing. You know, don't see what I'm doing over here. It's kind of like, no, everybody just check it out, you know? And we're going to blow stuff up over and over again. It's going to be like a NASCAR race. You're just going to like watch just to see things explode. And
yeah, popcorn and accidents. Exactly.
Yeah.
It kind of is comparable. It's just that, it's the reason why I'm talking 80% SpaceX is because the rocket industry right now is 80% SpaceX. It's not just the Starship either. It's Falcon 9, it's Crew Dragon, it's Cargo Dragon, it's all the projects they still have in the pipeline. It's just so much more than what anybody else is doing right now. I mean, you said Blue Origin. They've been developing New Glenn since when? There's nothing. There is. I mean, I'm rooting for everyone. I really am. And I don't really like the hate that is being brought against Blue Origin, because largely of because of Jeff Bezos. But you should see it from the engineer's standpoint. And you don't know what they're doing there. As you said yourself, they are very secretive. So we don't even know how far along they are. Recently, I heard some rumors about the New Glenn fairings being done with testing. The BE-4 is being delivered to ULA for Vulcan, but that's it. There is no information, so we don't know how far they are. They could be a few months away from a first test flight. You don't know. So I'm rooting for the engineers and not for Jeff Bezos, so everything's fine on that end. But even with that in mind, there is just so much more news about SpaceX. I mean, I live right next to the pads now, and I can walk out the door twice a week and see a SpaceX rocket launch. That's never been there before. That is just incredibly different than anything else we've seen so far. So it's hard to not talk 80% SpaceX if you have a space-related channel right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you have the science missions, which I love talking about, but they're sometimes 20 years apart or 5 years apart at least until the next big thing goes up. Like James Webb, for example, how long was that in development?
Yeah,
and then I'm
yeah.
wondering, why are they not just building two or three of them? They know how to build James Webb, right? So just build a few of them and send them up. But nobody else but SpaceX does that. They are building one and that's the mission. That's it. That's the end. But they now perfectly know how to build one. Why not make four or five of them? You know how to do it now. And so on and so forth. So SpaceX's approach is different. When they do something, they do thousands of it. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And I love that. That's for sure.
I was thinking about how... Again, like so you kind of created this YouTube channel around all the testing and the Starship stuff, and you're not alone. There's several other people. And for a while there, they were like, what was it? Like every 6 weeks they had a new one coming out, and they would like do the suborbital launch and kaboom, okay, let's try it again. And that was exciting. I actually remember I was shooting I don't know if you're that familiar with Nebula, but I've got a series that I shot on there called Mysteries of the Human Body.
Mm-hmm. I know
and
the show.
It was like it was in December of God. It's almost been, is it almost been 2 years now? Yeah. But anyway, I actually got a studio and we had the whole set thing and had a crew and I had my little computer right there with the script on it and a camera and we're going through the thing. And like, that was the day that they tested, I guess, SN8, the first one that actually went up.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the days that we were shooting was the day that they were launching. And so like, I literally had it up on my computer and it was muted and everything, but I was like keeping an eye on it. And as it got down close to, I don't know, 5 minutes or something like that, I was like, okay, we're taking a break. We all just like gathered around my computer and watched it and then like got back to recording. So, I mean, but it was just like every month or so, it seemed like there was a new launch going up and like you and all these people, you know, created these channels around this thing. And then it just kind of like crickets for a while, like nothing really happened for a while. Like, well, I mean, I know things were happening, but it wasn't
no explosions.
There wasn't any launches to cover happened. And stuff. Nobody, no live streams to do. And I was kind of like thinking about you and all these other guys and kind of being like, come on, like that's my kind of luck. You like create a whole channel around it. And then it's like, they're not like, dudes, come on.
No. There's much more to it. And actually, my channel's doing quite fine right now.
You just hit 250,000. Congrats.
Yeah. And more than 50 million views. And it's incredible. I still remember when we had our first talk, when I just started the channel and you gave me a few ideas what to do and what not to do. And if I would have known back then, it's incredible. But it's...
Would have known that it worked?
Huh?
Yeah. Well, you said if I would have known, if you had known what?
If I would have known how this develops, how large such a, I mean, you're a seasoned YouTuber and you've been doing this for a while.
I'm seasoned like a crepe pan. Yeah.
Well, I've been following you since you had, I don't know, 50,000 subscribers or so. So I've known your channel for some time now. And I can't even imagine how much experience you've accumulated over time. It's I mean, I'm getting a glimpse of it after 3 years, but it's incredible.
It's a wild ride.
Yeah. And I found my topic. It's SpaceX. It's space. It's all the stuff that's still to come. I mean, imagine the first live streams that astronauts do en route to Mars, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Moon landing.
I was kind of talking about that with the Artemis stuff. Like they're going to be able to live stream back to Earth, the Earth rise as they go around the other side of the moon. Like we've never been able to see it like that before, you know.
We'll be
there with them.
It's a whole different thing. I mean, Apollo, when 11 landed on the moon, I've seen that video 100 times or more and you can barely see. Oh
yeah, she wants to get involved.
Yeah, my cat's out the door. I closed the door.
Well, if I do that, she would be on the other side of the door like scratching at it the whole time. So
of course. Yeah,
she'll settle down in a second.
So yeah, what I was saying is that the moon landing video is such a bad quality that you can barely see what they're doing there. Now we're going to get 4K live streaming from everywhere they're going, and I'm so looking forward to that. I mean,
shoot, they may be able to stream VR or something.
Yeah, well, they
or at
will.
Least they could record VR, and then you could experience mm-hmm. it.
360 videos and all sorts of stuff, and it's going to be we're going to be right there with everybody that does these things, and that's the first time we can experience this. So it's going to be very different. It's going to be the same target, but us being able to experience it in a completely different way.
I got to admit, as I've been working on these Artemis videos, it's gotten me really excited for it. And it doesn't look like I'll be able to make this first launch, which is a bummer. No. But
I'll be there at as close as you can get. I got invited by NASA for 3 days.
Yeah, just actually. Brag about it. Go ahead. No,
I've got all the equipment laying down there right now to rig my camera to be able to do 160 FPS 4K recording.
Nice. What camera is it?
It's a Zcam, and I'm completely rigging the thing, like building it out like crazy right now. Like, I've had the camera for 2 years, and all I did with it so far was record my episodes. It's really good for that, but it can do so much more if you put the right equipment on it. And so in the last 2 weeks or so, funded by the patrons on Patreon, we've been like stocking it up more and more and more, and now it's
getting it out
machine that can I'm very much looking forward to putting it on the tripod and trying it out. And
you Artemis need to test it out on it. Some like model rockets.
I will
like, just go get flame some effects out there. Yeah, slow motion, it might look like the real thing. You could just skip the actual launch and then
yeah did it.
I mean, you didn't want to do anything
in there, done that, you know. No, Artemis is going to be crazy. Even though it's an old rocket design, it's flight proven hardware. It's going to be incredible to see if you're remotely interested in rockets. That is going to be something. It's the largest rocket yet to take off. It's got 4 RS-25s. It's got 5-segment boosters that punch out 5 tons of fuel per second and things like that. So it's going to be really interesting to see the thing launch. Anyone who has the time, I mean, this is probably going to come out after the launch, right? Maybe.
Assuming it goes off, you know, when it's supposed to and it doesn't get delayed.
Well, yeah, if it gets delayed and it hasn't flown yet, pack your bag, go to Kennedy Space Center and see the thing fly, because it's definitely worth it. Very much.
I think they sold out. Because I did look into it. It looks like you can't.
Well, you can always get to Jetty Park or Max Brewer Bridge or somewhere. It's a huge rocket, and it won't matter if you're 3 miles away or 6 or 7 miles. There's plenty of space. Shouldn't miss out. Come
down. Feel it in your chest. It'll be breathing, and it's like, I can't push out the air against the sound waves hitting my face.
Yeah, something like that, exactly. And if you like sure that kind of stuff, you get the idea. It's gonna be good.
Yeah, it's exciting. But you live right near there. You moved fairly recently. How'd that go?
Oh yeah.
I mean, you all settled in?
Yeah. And we don't want to move anymore. If we can stay here, we're going to stay here. It was the right decision. We're right next to everything, and we get so many opportunities for just being closer to the action. You get invited by everybody. And it's been, we've been here since April 16th now. Oh, wow. So it's been enough time to give me a nice Florida tan. And it's a lovely place. If you like sunshine and rockets and dolphins, it's pretty good.
We have sunshine and rockets in Texas. I don't know about that many dolphins, but definitely the other two.
You definitely have sunshine, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe not today. It's been flooding the last couple of days. I was going to ask about the move and how that goes and everything. I've never moved overseas before, like to another country. Is this the first international move you've made?
It's been 2.5 years of preparation. Only our visa application was 450 pages long, so it's that big of a folder that we had to make ourselves. It was a huge hassle due to COVID and due to several crises going on around the world right now. It got It got so expensive that we couldn't move our belongings from Germany to the United States yet. So we moved with 10 suitcases and 15 boxes shipped to mail, like moving boxes. Uh-huh. That's all we were able to take. So, and then the three kids, which didn't make it easier. We have a cat that moved with us. And yeah, it was really...
Yeah, I've heard even animals can be difficult to move over borders because... Yeah. Various reasons.
You know, when we did our big flight to come over to the United States, we had everything prepared. The house was already sold. We didn't even have a place to go back to when we went to the airport. And we arrived there with our suitcases and the cat and two friends who brought us there. And at the check-in, they asked us, what are you going to do with the cat? And we were like, we're bringing her. We have everything set. We did calls before and made sure that the cat can actually go on the plane. And they said, no, Singapore Airlines never takes pets in the cabin.
So you're like at the airport.
Mm-hmm. Not a place to go back to. Like, that's it. And we couldn't take the cat. So we had to give the cat to the friends that brought us to the airport. They took her in for six weeks. I had to go back to pick up the cat again. And then it worked. So there's been... quite a few things that went differently than we actually expected. It's a hassle. If you don't have to move to a different country, don't. If you don't really want it, don't do it.
I've never lived outside of Texas.
Great.
I grew up 100 miles from here. And like, you know, I just kind of like moved to this area for college, and then I got a job, and then I got married, and here we are, you know. And
yeah.
And that kind of bums me out. It's like there's so much of the world I haven't really experienced. I mean, we try to travel as much as we can, but it's different than living somewhere, you know. But I've always wondered how the moving to another country thing works out. I know it's a hassle. I've heard that from everybody, but
yeah. It's one of the best ways to experience a different culture is to actually live there, because sure. When you have when you go on vacation, even if it's 6 weeks or 2 months or something, you still have that I'm going to go back home thought in your head.
Yeah.
That is not with us, which is a really strange thing, because I spent 42 years in Germany and I'm not going back right now. You know, it's not the date of me packing my bags and going to the airport to go back to my home in Germany is not getting closer, which mm-hmm. is strange, but it also gives you a different mindset, because then you have no choice but to actually integrate into the other culture. And mm-hmm. let me tell you, United States is different from Germany. It is, I mean, it's both Western countries and all that, but we in Germany, you live differently than you do here in the mm-hmm. States. So
no, I'd love to go into that. Like what's been the biggest surprise, or what have been some things that have really stood out after moving here that you weren't expecting?
Okay.
So it can be good or bad.
Yeah. I know the United States. I have a sister here and a brother, and I've been here many times, and they've been here for 40 years. And so it's not like I've never been here before.
Sure. Okay.
And I thought I knew the United States before moving here. So verdict, I like it. There is a lot of things that we say in Europe about the United States, probably the same way you do here about mm-hmm. about Europe, which are plain wrong and not right. And so that was a good thing to see. People here welcomed us. People welcomed us with open arms. We have a few good friends by now, which is insane, taking into account how long we've been here. But mm-hmm. we've been here, what, like 4 months now? That's nothing. And still we have good friends by now, which is crazy. Your food is even unhealthier than I thought before. It's like, no, when you watch TV, every second commercial is about even more chicken wings. That's, ooh,
and
guys,
that's
you have to change that.
Ads.
Yeah. You don't recycle, which I don't like very much, because I was so used to it in Germany and it works pretty well. But on the other hand, I do like that things are much less regulated here. I know you complain about your bureaucracy, but you have no clue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bureaucracy in Germany is like 10 times more than it is here. It is insanely hard if you have an idea to turn it into reality. So for example, I wanted to open up a company around the YouTube channel in Germany, which at some point it just makes sense to have a company and not just yourself. So I wanted to do that. And it took me 8 months and 25,000 euros to be able to open up the company, which then luckily I didn't do. See your facial expression? There you go. And you're complaining about US bureaucracy. Don't. Here,
when
I wasn't
doing
even...
that.
Oh, many Americans do, though. Yeah. And here, I wasn't even living here yet. And we only had a physical address, which means you're not living in the US yet, but you need an address. So there's a website where you pay a monthly fee and then you have an address here. Mm-hmm. And it took me 2 days, one phone call and $200 to open up the company here in the US. And that is a good way of showing how different it is here. Mm-hmm. Everything's much less complicated, and I love that.
So you like rockets, do you? Well, tell you what, there's a great documentary on CuriosityStream called Fly Rocket Fly about a rocket company that you probably have never heard of. Yeah, before SpaceX, before Rocket Lab, Blue Origin, all these guys, there was a private space launch company out of Germany called OTRAG, whose goal was to build a simple and inexpensive rocket to compete with NASA back in the 1970s. It's a story of charismatic scientists with big dreams and everything that ultimately went wrong and left them in the dustbin of history. It's a really cool story that I really didn't know about, but it's a fun little footnote in rocket history worth exploring, and you can find it in a ton of other space documentaries on CuriosityStream. CuriosityStream, of course, is perhaps the best streaming service for documentaries on the internet, covering everything from science to art, pop culture, history, animals, you name it. If you've got a curiosity about it, you can find it on CuriosityStream. Plus, if you sign up at my special URL, curiositystream.com/JoeScottPod, you can get free access to Nebula, the streaming service that I'm a part of, as well as many of your favorite science communicators on YouTube. At least all of my favorites are there, where you can watch my videos ad-free and earlier than everybody else, and where you can see our Nebula-exclusive videos and series like my Mysteries of the Human Body series and the ongoing Forgotten Atrocities series. Plus, now there's Nebula classes where you can actually learn skills from your favorite creators. It's just a really cool platform that's always adding new stuff, so it's really worth checking out if you haven't. But you get both of those services for only $14.79 for an entire year when you sign up at curiositystream.com/JoeScottPod. That's 26% off the normal rate. It's just over barely a dollar a month. It's got to be the best streaming deal that's ever happened. So once again, curiositystream.com/JoeScottPod. Go check it out, and thanks to CuriosityStream for supporting this podcast. Now back to Felix. I'm thinking back to when I created I have an S corp, but I mean, it was, oh my God, I was like right out of college when I set this thing up. I just like hired a lawyer and he did it. And there you go. Now I have to file taxes on it every year. I am curious about taxes in other countries. I mean, not the tax rates. Everybody talks about the tax rates, but like, taxes always feels like some kind of weird game to me, because like you have to calculate how much you owe. They know how much you owe. And if you don't get the number just right, you'll get in trouble. And I'm like, why don't you just tell me what I owe you and I'll pay you?
Yeah.
But silly. They don't do that. You got to like jump through all the hoops and do it yourself and get to the right number. And it's like, if you know the number, just tell me.
Yeah. It's much too complicated too. No, it's the same in Germany. It's exactly the same. Arguably, it's even easier in Germany with taxes, because there are a few pretty good contractors that you can use basically to they just ask you questions. You don't even have to know anything about the tax law. They just ask you questions, what do you do, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it'll spit out the tax form for you. So that is actually pretty good. But I totally agree, it's, in my opinion, the whole tax system is kind of stupid. It should be dumped down to just a few lines of text, and that could be possible, and it should be an automated process. Maybe it's going to get to that point at some point.
I would also love to see an itemized like list of places where the taxes are going.
That would be great.
It just kind of feels like you're just throwing money into a dark hole, and you don't really, I mean, I'm very aware that there's things like streets and whatnot that you get out of it and whatnot, but can I say whatnot one more time? And
yes,
but it'd be great if it was like, oh, so this is what you're getting from paying your taxes. Like they don't market the taxes very well. Like, I feel like they could very easily be like, look at all these things you get. Thank you for paying into the system or something. But no, it's just like, you're off by $5. You need to recalculate this.
And I recently,
the money.
Yeah, I recently saw news about the like a week ago or so. They did a new estimate that every citizen in the United States right now is in $200,000 of debt.
Oh, like average?
Yeah, if you take the governmental debt and you split it amongst the people, 200,000. Isn't that nice? I don't know how they calculate, but yeah. But that's the same in Germany. And, it's the same thing over there. You have a few things where you're like, how is that even working? How does that even, I mean, what? You print your own money. You put everyone in. I was never asked if I can, if I want to be in debt, you know, it just happens. So yeah. That's the kind of stuff that you have to deal with when you're, well, part of such a large community, I guess.
Like, could you itemize it down so much that you can see like, oh, I put like $5 into Artemis.
You could probably.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, so maybe. You should watch the launch. It's probably more than $5.
I paid for this, damn it.
Yeah.
That's my rocket.
I made the joke that when you see Artemis go up, you'll see these dollars dripping out of the rear end.
instead of ice flaking off, it's just they're just insulated with dollars.
Stacks of dollar bills.
Didn't somebody, they were talking about the new launch mount or the launch tower that's needed for Artemis, like, and it was $1.3 billion or something just for the tower. And they were like, if you stacked $1.3 billion, you'd get to the moon. Which I don't think is actually true.
Well,
but, you know,
that, of course, that wouldn't work. But yeah, Artemis has been very expensive. But there's actually there are a few technologies in there that NASA will be able to use even after Artemis. And nobody would have, when they started Artemis 11 years ago, nobody would have been able to predict that SpaceX is building a Starship right now. That's what you have to take into account. SpaceX is really disrupting the industry, the same way that Tesla made all the car manufacturers in the world start building EVs, even though EVs existed long before that. But they were these, remember the days when they did these carbon fiber things with solar on the roof, and they went through the desert on long distance records, like going 20 miles per hour. And that was EVs before stuff like Tesla happened. And now everybody is forced basically to keep up with it. And that's the same with SpaceX and the rocket industry right now. It's like the reason why we're having so, it's not just SpaceX popping out of the ground right now. It's Relativity Space, it's Rocket Lab going on, it's Astra, it's all sorts of companies trying to innovate on this impulse that's been giving that's been given. We can reuse rockets, and that actually makes it cheaper. Who would have thought? But before SpaceX, nobody really tried. When they started, everybody was laughing about Elon Musk with his mariachi band when he formed SpaceX in, 2004, I think?
Yeah.
And nobody could have predicted that. That's what I want to say. So you have to cut them some slack that they are sitting there with their SLS wanting to launch it, of course, because there's a lot of money has been poured into it. And a lot of attention is on it as well, not just from the public, but also from Congress, from people who have been funding this thing for years and years. So here they are with SLS, and now it's going to launch. I'm going to cheer for it. It's going to be incredibly interesting to see the thing launch and to see where they're getting, if they can actually accomplish the mission, which there's a lot of ifs in there, because it's not the same as Apollo, even if it does look very similar. The capsule is like three times the size, and it's a different build, and it's lots of new technology in there. So it's going to be interesting to see them try it out and circle around the moon. And after that, there is probably going to be a lot of change, and you can already see it. Starship is already part of Artemis, and other companies that weren't 11 years ago, even in the plans, have been jumping in, and so on and so forth. It's a political program, and it takes time to change something like that.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, I was sort of making the same point that, like, if Starship is able to even necessarily beat, but even tie or be close to Artemis 2 in terms of like when it goes up, if they're actually able to pull it off,
I think that might be the last time we see the SLS go up.
What do you mean with go up?
The
for Starship and Artemis II. What do you mean?
Well, I was talking earlier about the whole Dear Moon versus Artemis II, like who could actually get there first kind of thing. Like
a fully fleshed out moon lander that is capable of delivering people to the surface of moon for Artemis II.
Well, no, they're not going to the moon, or they're not going to land on the moon for Artemis II, but like just going around the moon, like if Starship actually works and can be like flight proven and human rated and all that kind of stuff, which I have thoughts on that too, but I just don't see how SLS continues if Starship really works, you know?
Yeah. Oh, Starship could deliver people to the surface. The only reason why they're not is because NASA was against it, because Gateway.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing in the Artemis program that really doesn't make much sense if you have a Starship.
Mm-hmm.
Why
have a Gateway? No, like if you see the Starship docked with a Gateway, it's just like it's twice as big as the rest of the Gateway.
It probably can't even, because its inertial mass is so large that it would change the orbit of Gateway if something went wrong with docking. It's the same as Starship docking with the International Space Station, which is much larger than the planned Gateway. It's so large that if there is ever so little energy transferred to the station while it's docking, it's going to be a problem. So I wouldn't expect Starships to ever dock with the space station. And they wouldn't need to either, because if a Starship docks with the SLS, it doubles its pressurized space.
Wait, you said very, SLS, very you mean large. Space station?
The space station, exactly. Yeah, okay. So it's large, it's very large. You can easily build new space stations with a Starship, better ones, and much quicker than they were able to build the International Space Station. I mean, the ISS its end date is ticking already. It's going to likely be 2031 right now. NASA has just announced they are giving out contracts for vehicles that'll deorbit the station when its final day comes, because it's so large that it actually needs a vehicle attached to it to properly deorbit it it's going to skim the atmosphere, go out to 150 kilometers, skim the atmosphere again, and so on and so forth to maximize the time that they can actually control the station. And so it's going to be very difficult to deorbit the thing. But that tells us that 2031 is probably the latest we're going to have an ISS. After that, we need something else anyway. And so Starships would be perfect for that.
Well, and there's private space stations that are already in the works with Axiom and Orbital and Reef. Others, is that a Blue Origin thing?
It's Blue Origin.
Yeah. Okay.
Very.
I was
secret.
Actually thinking earlier about this, the size, the payload size of a Starship being able to, because it's so much wider. Mm-hmm. Like you could construct a whole new space station with wider modules, and have them have more space up there with fewer pieces, basically.
Yep. 9 meter diameter. So you have at least 8 meters on the inside, which is much larger than anything SLS. Yep.
I still love the footage from Skylab. What, to this day, isn't that like the biggest space that people have had up in space?
2 days ago, I showed that to my sister, who was visiting me from Wisconsin. And she was amazed. I showed her these typical videos where the astronauts are doing somersaults in this wide open space. And she was like, whoa, what is that? That was long ago, before they started cramping into sardine cans in low Earth orbit. It's so sad that the Apollo program got canceled so abruptly. They had so many plans for all sorts of things. And
then that was a fun
stuck
video
in low
I
Earth
did.
Orbit.
I looked into all the stuff that they were planning on doing after Apollo, and you're just kind of like, oh, man.
Exactly.
That would be so different now.
Mm-hmm. It's all about the funding. It's not even that much funding that's needed for this kind of stuff. It's there. I've I've read so many comments under my videos about people complaining that there's so much money going into space exploration. Mm-hmm. It really isn't that much money that's going into it. There are other projects that have like 100 times the funding, like nuclear aircraft carriers. Mm-hmm. That stuff is really expensive as well.
Yeah. Well, and I always make the argument whenever I hear that, and you're right, I hear it all the time in my comments too. People act like they just stuffed $1 billion in a fairing and launched it out into space. You mm-hmm. know, no, all that money went to people who were working yeah. on these things. Yeah. Now you can make the argument that it might be better spent elsewhere, that it's too siloed in a certain, you know, class of people or whatever, but fair enough. But it is money that goes into the economy. You know, the James Webb Space Telescope cost $1.2 billion. Now, actually, what was it, like $11 billion?
I was about to say, yeah. That's a very cheap James Webb.
Yeah. But the point is, like, it was spent at these companies that were building it, and the people who work there, you know, got paid from that money and stuff. And
And it goes all the way down as well. It's not just high class engineers being paid. It's all sorts of people. Mm-hmm. If you look at the program, it's especially if it's SpaceX programs, because they try to avoid these high pay people as much as they can. Because if you want to build a rocket for what, $5 million in the end, a Starship, you can't have these kinds of people working on it, because it's going to be very, very expensive. So they want to automate. And then in the end, you'll have similar people to people working in a car factory that will be built, that will be building Starships in the end.
Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't they hire like water tanker people or?
Yeah.
Water tower
just
builders?
Normal welders and normal engineers and all sorts of people you would find in all sorts of normal projects are working on Starships right now, and very few of them are actually traditionally from the old aerospace industry.
Mm. yeah that's just something that I like you said, I see it a lot in my comments, like, we're wasting all this money on space stuff, and it's like, it doesn't go to space, it goes to people.
but at some point we'll even be at the point where it stays in space. Imagine that, when we have colonies up there and industry is forming and mm-hmm. all these kinds of things. I mean of course there's lots of ifs in there. If SpaceX is able to, if the other industry sectors are pitching in, and so on and so forth. But if it actually works, we're not just going to go to the moon. We're not just going to go to Mars. We're going to leave this planet. A part of our civilization is going to go to space, which would, I mean, that's the whole reason. If you look at any science fiction story, anything that is, I mean, I'm a huge science fiction fan, and the biggest interest I have when reading or watching science fiction is how would it be to live out there, to venture to the stars, not even to the stars, even in our own solar system. There are quite a few good shows and movies that are just set inside our solar system. Imagine if we can explore the asteroid belts and mine for resources, if we can build fueling stations on Jupiter's moons and things like that. All that would be possible in a few decades if what SpaceX and all the others are doing right now actually works out. So at some point, it won't just even be beneficial for Earth, it'll be beneficial for humanity expanding into the solar system. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's well invested money.
It's funny because I'm on the side of that space is inspiring, and I get really excited about this kind of stuff. I had a couple of people on my team come over the other night, and we were just kind of talking about it. And one of them, his name is Cooper. He's the guy that was working on these Artemis videos, and he was like, "Man, I just kind of teared up at one point, just kind of thinking about, you know, all this stuff." Like, he got like emotionally involved in it and stuff. And it's interesting to me how, like, I'll just say people like us, I'll lop you into this group, but like we feel that sort of emotional connection to what's going on, and it for me, it gives me hope. Like, there's just so much garbage going on in the world all the time. But like, you see something like this and it's like, wow, we can still come together and do really big things. It's just like a reminder that like, we can do great things if we really try and have the right motivation and stuff. But for a lot of people, as I'm sure you see in your comments all the time too, it's just like this giant waste of money. There's enough problems down here on Earth and, you know, billionaires trying to leave Earth for the rest of us and all this. And it's always interesting to me how different people can have totally different, I guess, reactions to space stuff. Like I said, like you and I and you know, people on my staff and whatnot, like, it's so inspiring to us, we get emotional about it. But for other people, they get emotional in the other direction. It's just a travesty and it's a waste of money. And we got bigger problems down here and there's people living in the streets and we got billionaires going up into space and stuff. And I get that. Yeah. Of course I empathize with that kind of thing. But I'm constantly going back to like, but we need something to inspire us. We need something to shoot for, you know. You can't just like always be like dealing with the problems in front of you. You need to have a vision. For me, that inspiring vision of like going out into space and finding new frontiers. And I've always made the argument that like the life that we live, the quality of life that we have right now is only possible because of space. When was the last time you got lost? Nobody gets lost anymore because you got your little phone that'll just tell you where to go and stuff like that. The only reason you can do that is because of the space infrastructure that we've, you know, created up there. We all benefit from it in ways that we probably don't even think about. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling now, but
it's just interesting to me
how people can have different reactions to it.
Yeah. There's a reason why I said in the beginning of this conversation that we're having here that I'm missing the recycling we do in Germany. It's obvious. We need to be really careful with what we're doing right now. And anybody who's looked into the numbers probably agrees. But that doesn't mean we need goals. You need, as you said, you need inspiration. You need something to work towards. And I think, there's this famous picture of the pale blue dot, and you can just put your thumb on it and Earth is gone. And, what's left is everything else. It's just slightly bigger than Earth, and I think it's worth exploring. And at some point, we won't have that. That's another thing that Elon Musk constantly keeps saying, is that there is a window of opportunity. There always is. Even if we do incredibly well, at some point, our civilization will be gone. It's always like that. Mm-hmm. So there is a window of opportunity to be able to even try and explore, to put our foot out there and see where it's going. So we should. And right now we are obviously, if you look at what SpaceX is doing there, and not just SpaceX, we have the technical capabilities now to be able to do it. So we should. We can still save the planet. We can still do better recycling and drive EVs and use solar power or whatever you deem the right thing to do to improve our planet. We can still do that and launch rockets. So we should.
Yes, I think that that those help each other out. Solar power. So much of that was designed and developed from NASA going up and powering the ISS and things like that. I think the shift is like, some people are like, we're ruining Earth. And now these people want to leave Earth and go ruin somewhere else. And I'm like, no, but the technologies that we're developing that make it possible for us to do that, water reclamation, for example, and solar power and that kind of thing. Like, the things that we learn up there get applied down here and make things better down here.
Yes.
And that's the different mindsets that I feel like don't really.
Also, if you think of, just for a moment, think about that we could actually make it to Mars or to the moon and build bases there, not just scoop up some dirt, put a flag down and go back, but actually stay there. What's the one technology that we really, or the technology branch that we really need to improve to be able to stay there? We need to be very efficient. That's something we're lacking here right now. We need to be much more efficient. So all the technology that comes out of energy consumption and recycling and being able to work with very little to achieve great things, that's exactly what we need on Earth right now. So all the technology that we develop for these destinations to be able to even do it will benefit us down here. Like I said, if we can do both at the same time, and we can, we should, because somebody who designs rockets is not good at designing recycling systems. So let them do their job. It's kind of like when there's always when there's a big project and people want it to go faster, they just say, why aren't they putting 100% of their workforce into that part so that it works faster? It's because the public relations guy can't paint a wall or design a car or whatever. It's the public relations guy. He needs to be doing public relations. And that's the same with us here on the planet. Somebody who learned how to design a rocket engine probably isn't the best at, and so on and so forth.
Selling the idea.
It's a different thing. It's just it's two different projects, and if we can do both at the same time, I do definitely think we should. It's inspiring. Mm-hmm. It'll help us in the long run, and it's the one thing we've done since we stepped out of the grass fields in Africa is to walk forward, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what this is. It's us walking, going beyond low Earth orbit. We've been doing a lot of stuff in space in the last few years, in the last few decades, but there's this classic picture. When you ask somebody what does space look like, they'll describe this typical horizon of Earth with beautiful stars and maybe an ISS in it. That's space for us right now. But actually, space is that picture without that beautiful Earth horizon. That's low Earth orbit. Low Earth orbit is 300 kilometers away from us. It's not really that far away. It doesn't even have zero G. The only reason it has zero G is because we're constantly falling. Yeah. So that's not space. Space is that picture in black. That's where I'd like us to go.
I like that.
Thank you.
Low Earth orbit is not space. We're just falling at a great height. Really fast.
Yeah. I mean, we've managed that. It's crazy enough, but it's not, that's not what space is. Space is much further out. Space is everything except for that pale blue dot. And it's 99.9999999 and so on and so forth. That's what we still have left. Mm-hmm. So we should go out there.
So you mentioned you enjoyed science fiction, I guess reading science fiction growing up and stuff. Is that kind of what led you toward all this? Like, what leads this guy in Germany to be so interested in rockets that he goes through the hassle and trouble of moving to Florida so that he can watch launches go up all the time?
You know, first of all, I want to make the news. Florida man hugs rocket and doesn't let go. I'm working on the project.
I did say Florida with a lot of stank just there. Sorry to everybody in Florida.
Florida is lovely. Don't let Joe tell you anything different.
There's a little Texas-Florida rivalry.
So it's the rockets. And that's what I'm talking about mostly on my channel as well. There are channels that are very, very busy with the science of exploring space, and there are those that are very busy with satellites or specific things like Starlink. Even there are all sorts of different things. For me, it's the rockets. It's designing, building rockets, rocket engines, how to make it more efficient, how to make it re-enter a second stage. Re-entering the planet atmosphere is an insanely hard task to do, because it's so much faster than the booster itself, which most people don't know either. They're wondering why, well, we're landing boosters. How is it so hard to get a second stage back? That's the kind of questions I'm super interested in. So it's the physics, the engineering. That's what I love. And it always was.
Did you have like an engineering background? Did you study that kind of thing?
No. Well, I did, but not at a university. I'm self-taught. So I've read a million books about these kinds of topics, and I never really fit into schools. I don't know why. Maybe I just had bad teachers, or it wasn't you know, when you're in a class, you have to learn what the class gives you, what the topic mm-hmm. is. And I was always sidetracking, but I'm done with that. Can I do this? And so I always bought books, watched movies, and tried to inform myself. And that's what I've been doing for on the field of rockets for 30 years now, mm-hmm. more even, 35 years almost, because I started, the first thing that got me interested in space was Challenger, because it was, well, I was 6 years old, mm-hmm. and I didn't know anything about space and rockets yet, but I saw the explosion on TV, and I saw everybody staring at it and being and shouting and screaming and crying, because it was terrible back then. And my family was always interested in this kind of stuff, so I noticed my mom and my dad being like, oh my god, what just happened? And so that's the first thing I remember, because I wanted to know what happened. And so I at the age of six, I started researching what went wrong with Challenger. That was my intro into the space industry, basically. And from there on, it just, maybe that's even the reason why I'm so interested in the rockets, because that was the first thing I did, was what happened? Why did it, I mean, it looked, so my first thought was, wow, that looks beautiful, because I didn't know what happened, you know, oh, wow, these two boosters going to the side and this big explosion in the middle, oh, fireworks. And then I looked at everybody else's faces and I was like, something must be different here. Yeah. And I started researching into why it happened, what went wrong, and how to maybe improve it, and what will come next. But back then, there wasn't much. There was the space shuttle. There were the Russians who were launching the same rockets over and over. There was ESA, back then still very small, but also just launching the same rockets over and over, and largely the same technology as everybody else. There wasn't any innovation. And that changed when, I mean, there were some blips here and there of companies trying to dare and improve something, but it wasn't really that much. And then at some point SpaceX came, and that focused my interest completely. When I saw the Grasshopper do its testing and heard that they would be trying to land boosters after that, and that they would be building space capsules and wanted to mass produce them at a great price cost point, I realized that if they actually pull this off, it would change everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what they've been building on since then. Now with the Starship, it's even crazier than that. We could hit prices of kilogram to low Earth orbit prices, payload prices of under $100. Imagine that. What do you weigh?
What do I weigh?
Yeah.
In kilograms?
Yeah.
You're talking to an American. I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So let me help you out. Maybe 75, 80 kilos, something like that. That would be, that times 100 is your price to low Earth orbit.
Wow. If human flights to space could be like per pound kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
just,
it's not.
Just pay per pound.
Imagine that. Even if it's $15,000 or $20,000, it would still be an expensive thing to do compared to the low budget prices we pay for flights nowadays. Mm-hmm. But 20 years ago, the price, or maybe 30 years ago, the prices for flights were comparable to something like that. So think that, mm-hmm. 20 or 30 years further, and we might be traveling to space for $500. In 20 to 30 years, we'll still see that if we eat healthy. That, I mean, who wouldn't want to follow that?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm interested in. That's what got me into space, rockets, and everything in the first place. It was the same thought all the way in the beginning. What's happening there? That's what I was always chasing.
I'm curious if we could like make predictions about the future. I know I avoid it these days because like it's just impossible, yeah. You know.
Yeah.
But you're talking about some future stuff that you'd like to see. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I responded to in one of these videos that I just recorded is like, would I want to go up on something like Dear Moon or something like that? I'm not that guy. I think it's like you were talking about when you were a kid that you saw Challenger and all that. So I'm a little bit older than you. I was maybe in like fifth grade or so when that happened.
But how old are you?
47.
Oh, okay. I'm 42, so it's not that much.
So it'd be about 5, yeah. But but same thing, like I wanted to be an astronaut more than anything. I had the space shuttle on my wall. I had like little models of space shuttles and stuff. I knew all the rockets that, you know, Mercury and Gemini went up on and everything. And where was I going with that? But my point is, like, I was always really into it and stuff. And now it's like the idea that there could be a space hotel or some kind of space tourism thing. If it got so regular that it's just something people do now, even if it's expensive, it's something I might want to save up and do someday. But I'm not going to be one of the people testing out what it's like to land a starship on a couple of pins on some chopsticks, you know, like I'm not going to be on that ship, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't need that either.
Yeah.
It's the same. I've got the question asked plenty of times before on my live streams and in comments, if I would go to space. I would love to go to space, but only if it's safe, because I have family, I have 3 kids and so on and so forth. So I have to think about that as well. And Mars is completely out of the question, because it's just too far away. It's at least 2.5 years of trip, and it's the most hardcore camping you can imagine. It's not going to be pleasant. So yeah, let the people who are much more suited for that do this. But the moon is what I'm always saying is the one thing I'd love to go to. What do you think? A 2-week trip, 2 of us to the moon and back?
Let's see. How old would I be by the time we could do something like that?
10 years, maybe.
You think?
I do.
You think in 10 years there will be civilians. I almost said there'll be civilized people on the moon. You think in 10 years normal people could go like stay at a moon hotel?
Well, it's optimistic, but I do think so. Yeah, not a moon hotel, but the same we have right now with Inspiration 4, for example, mm-hmm. or the occasional guest on the ISS, things like that. So it's not going to be the Hilton Valles Marinares or something on Mars, but it might be us being able to go there. That's what I was saying. So no TUI flight to the moon. That's going to take a little longer, but I do think in 10 years that would be possible, because what people are underestimating here, I think mostly, is that it all comes down to payload delivered. We have the technology. We could right now, if we had a beamer like from Star Trek, we could just beam modules to the moon and that's it. We'd have a base that's as big as a small village, no problem, because the tech is there. The moon is actually easier than low Earth orbit and so on and so forth, because you have gravity. You can build in a normal way. You can just set down just beam them there and you're good. You know, if we could do that, we'd have the base on the moon. The only thing missing is lots of payload going there. Mm-hmm. That is the biggest problem. And if Starship actually works out, I think 150 tons is on the low end. I think they can go past 200. Mm-hmm. So 200 tons is a lot of mass. And if you start, I've been at ESA and I saw the Luna Regolith printers at work. They had some simulated Luna Regolith and they were printing walls just fine. Mm. And the printer didn't look like it was 200 tons. Not nearly, actually. It was maybe 2 tons or something. Mm-hmm. So if you start sending equipment to the moon, it would actually be pretty quick that we have a substantial base foothold on the moon. No problem. It just needs to be cheap enough. That's the biggest problem. Because right now with SLS, you send a few astronauts and a few hot dogs and sodas around the moon, and it costs you, what, 2.5 at absolute minimum per flight. But actually, if you take in the development cost, it's more like 20 billion mm-hmm. per flight. So that's what's holding us back. It's the same reason why we're locked in low Earth orbit, because the space shuttle was beautiful. I love it. Every time I go to the Atlantis exhibition here at Kennedy Space Center, if you've not been there, go, by the way, it's incredible. But it was what, 450 million per flight at least. And that's the problem. If that goes down to 5 million or something, we're talking. And if that happens with Starship, simple transport flights, because that's what would be needed to build a base on Mars, on the moon. You don't need fancy stuff. You just need fairing space and payload capacity. Mm-hmm. That's it. And you send all those to the moon, that would actually be pretty quick. And there's plenty of companies working on equipment right now, mm-hmm. even specialized in SpaceX's Starship. They are I've talked to a few of them that haven't even disclosed their projects yet, and they're working on 8-meter diameter modules.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So there's a lot of stuff we can send up with Starships if it actually works.
I've been making the argument for a while that I think it's going to take longer for Starship to get human rated than we mm-hmm. than we want, because it's just such a new way of doing everything and all that kind of stuff. But even if it takes a long time for it to get human rated, the point you just made, I think, stands pretty well, that like getting a whole bunch of stuff into orbit or getting a whole bunch of stuff to the moon and making it a very commonplace daily thing to just like put a massive space station up into space or something, you know.
Exactly.
That's a game changer right there.
It's like SpaceX has been sending 150 tons to space so far this year, which is so much more than what everybody there's that's like I think it's double of what everybody else has sent up so far this year, just one single company. Mm-hmm. But 150 tons is one Starship, and they're supposed to launch 3 times a day. See, the difference is immense. It's mm-hmm. not just a little more. It's not just 50% more or so. We're talking the payload of half a year in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. If that is where you can start building normal stuff in space and not just a super specialized science laboratory, but manufacturing. You can start building a dock in space, for example, to build spaceships in space, because the biggest problem we have with our spaceships is Earth's insanely high gravity. For a planet that size, the gravity is really a lot. One G is, I mean, if we had 2 Gs, we could almost not leave this planet. We wouldn't be spacefaring at all, probably. So 1 G is it's still doable, but it's very, very difficult. So if we start building spaceships in space, they don't have to leave Earth's gravity well, which would be very, very beneficial as well, and so on and so forth. So we need to really actually go out there and start, not just for science trips, but for actually staying there. That's what I meant earlier as well. Mm-hmm. That is the most important part, is not to do another science mission somewhere, but to actually go out there it's kind of like me moving to the United States without the date where I'm going to pack my suitcases mm-hmm. again and travel back to Germany. It's staying there. The people that are going to go to Mars are not going to have that pack your suitcase date.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest difference.
I've compared going to Mars to being more like the first European settlers coming across the Atlantic to the United States. Yeah. It's really more of that kind of thing. Like, bring the whole family.
And it's going to be the same amount of danger.
Yeah.
It's not going to be, that's what I meant with a hardcore camping trip. It's not really going to be nice to go there. So, it needs tough people. But if there's one thing that history has shown us, that is that there's a surprising amount of people willing to do these kinds of things. It's mm-hmm. it's us stepping out of the grass fields in Africa. We did it, even though we didn't know exactly what happens or where this would lead us, or if there is a dangerous lion sitting out somewhere. We just wanted to go there.
Mm-hmm. And I look forward to riding the coattails of much braver people than I and doing something similar once they've proven it safe. So
exactly,
that's the person I will confess, that's the person I am. I'm not the hero, but I will benefit from what the heroes do, let's put it that way.
Well, what would the hero be without the person sitting on the roadside cheering for them when they ride along? You know,
true. And throwing the ticker tapes.
Yeah, and confetti parades is very important for heroes. Trust me.
Well, I'll be one of those guys then, with my my little YouTube channel.
With a little camera.
Well, we can start to wrap this up. we've talked about the future plans and stuff like that, and you've got your you got Artemis 2 or Artemis 1 coming up that you're gonna probably, by the time people see this, you've already done it. Anything else on the horizon?
Oh, all sorts of things on the horizon. That's the best thing about me specializing in the space industry. That is a glorious time right now to do so. There is so much happening, and I'm looking forward to so many things. Right now, Relativity Space, for those who are interested and watching this right now, it's not just SpaceX. Relativity Space Rocket Lab is working on reusing and building a new rocket. Astra, there are plenty of projects in the pipeline everywhere in the spaceflight industry, and I'm looking forward to every single one of them.
It's a crazy time.
It is.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I just wanted to pile on a little bit when you were talking about that Artemis thing, or Atlantis at the Kennedy Space Center.
The visitor complex, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I went there for not the first Falcon Heavy launch, but one of them. And I got to go to the I keep wanting to say Artemis now, Atlantis.
Atlantis Center, yeah.
Yeah, so you like walk into that room and there's all those screens and they show a little like sys boom bah, you know, like here's all the missions that it went on and stuff. And it's kind of like, yeah, okay. And then like the screens go up and there it is. It's like hanging right in front of you. And I legit had to like have a moment.
I'm tearing up every time.
Yeah, no I just got all teary eyes. Like, oh my God.
It's every time I've been in there, like, I don't know, 10 times now, largely because showing visitors, the one thing I always do when somebody visits me here is like it dragging them to the visitor complex to show them all the cool stuff there. And every time I'm standing there and that see-through carpet is being rolled up, I'm tearing up every time.
Well, I've only done it the once, but yeah, I like all these people just kind of like just started walking in. I'm like, give me a second.
Yeah. It is incredible.
Yeah.
And that's the hope and future goal aspect, I think, because when you see Atlantis, you see what great things we've already done. And it makes me tear up. Yep. Same as you.
But it goes back to that thing of like, there's some people, I guess, like us that just, it is a very emotional thing. Spaceflight is.
It is.
And it's an interesting.
I'm going to be tearing up when Artemis goes up. Yeah, going to be tearing up when Artemis goes up. I'm pretty sure about that. I'll be filming it with my camera because I likely won't be able to live stream from there, which I would love to, but it's just not possible with the equipment we have right now. That's Tim Dodd does this kind of stuff. He has his equipment everywhere. It's insane. Yeah, Luna. It's really, really cool. I mean, what he does there is incredible. And we're so much smaller still. But we're working on it.
Well,
but for Artemis 1, it's not going to happen. But I'll be filming it. And I'm pretty sure it's inspiring.
For the sake of realism, you need to just kind of like have an eyedropper and just like drip some water on the lens while you're this is the real experience of watching this.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Anyway, thanks for what you do, and if anybody out there has not checked out your channel, go check out What About It.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you haven't seen Felix's channel yet, it's called What About It on YouTube. It really is one of the few channels I follow to keep up with all things Starship, but also all kinds of other space news. So if that's up your alley, go check him out. Give him a subscribe. I think you'll like it. This episode was produced by Kimmy Britt, edited by Bray Brown. I'm Joe Scott. You can find me everywhere at Answers with Joe, pretty much at all the socials and all over the place. Of course, my YouTube channel is Answers with Joe. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. Please do share this if you thought it was interesting. And a nice review on whatever podcast player you're using right now really does go a long way. But until next time, thanks. Have a good one. Now go out there and start some conversations of your own. Take care.